Welcome to The Upshot, Multi-World Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. I'm the publisher, Charlie Eisenhood. Joining me is Josh Mansfield. Josh, it's the World's Preview episode. Are you excited?
Charlie, I've been waiting for this episode since my first episode on The Upshot.
We're finally here. We're getting you ready before the weekend. There's a chance, if we have to, that we might do some kind of emergency podcast before the start of the rounds on Tuesday. Of course, we'll be back next week with shows after every round and catching you up on everything that's been going on. So let's just lay out some basic facts first. The tournament starts Tuesday, June 22nd, and it runs through Saturday, June 26th. Of course, there's some other events going on as well at Worlds. There's like the mixed doubles. There's the, I think they do a distance contest, all those kind of other fun field events. But of course, the main show is MPO and FPO taking on these courses in Ogden, Utah. It's going to be at the Mulligan's Golf Course as well as the Fort. Two courses, five rounds, as has become customary since 2018. Remember back 2016 and prior, we had, you know, you had a bunch of rounds, then you had semis, and then you had finals, like final nine. And then in 2017, they switched it to a four-round tournament, and it didn't really feel special enough. And so now they've found the happy medium of five rounds, not the, you know, insane nine-round marathons that it used to be back in the day. But I think this is the format we're going to see for the World Championships for quite some time as kind of the modern evolution of this tournament. So both MPO and FPO will play three rounds at the Fort, two rounds at Mulligan's. MPO starts on Mulligan's in round one, FPO on the Fort. They alternate each of those days. And then the final day on Saturday, both will play the Fort. Remember, Mulligan's open golf course, a lot of water, a lot of hazard, but also plenty of hyzers and lots of open putts. On the other hand, the Fort, tight woods, very, very guarded greens, lots of trees, and lots of treacherous areas. So those are the basic foundation here. Of course, all of the coverage will be available on Disc Golf Network Live. They're going to have two separate shows, FPO and MPO, and then the post-produced coverage will be on all of the places we know and love. GK Pro has FPO lead and Jomez has MPO lead. So that's kind of some foundations. Initial thoughts about Worlds, Josh, as you just kind of look ahead to next week.
I am thrilled to be a part with all the spectators that are going to be there. They sold so many tickets. And if you even go on Facebook now, you see people saying, do you have any spare spectator passes? Oh, yeah. Someone's not using it, maybe. I want to buy that pass. I didn't get one. It's going to be packed. I know myself, my wife, my brother-in-law, we're all going down. I'm excited to be a part of that environment. And I think not only is it a world championship, but that amount of spectators is going to bring a level of hype and buzz to this tournament that is going to be tangible, whether you are there or if you're just watching it on coverage. And I think it's going to be exciting to watch.
I'm looking forward to seeing the payout. I don't think that's been posted yet. As far as I understand, all of that spectator money, $50 tickets, they sold like 1,200 or something. I don't know what the final numbers are. You think about what that means. We're talking about $70,000+. And that's all going to be going into the purse. So we could see some fatty payouts because that money is going to be on top of all of the money the PDGA puts in. And that the tournament itself puts in with the sponsorships. And every time I've talked to Jade Sewell, the TD, he's just talked about how everything's all systems go. You know, the sponsors didn't back out due to COVID. You know, Utah's been one of the more open states throughout COVID. And things are kind of full swing there right now, kind of very much a post-pandemic world in Utah. So it's going to be really exciting. We're going to talk about a ton of storylines. We've got a very special guest joining us in just a moment to break it all down with us. And of course, we're going to make our picks. So we hope you enjoy. It's going to be a really fun show. Stay with us. It's The Upshot. The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf, makers of the best bags in the sport. It's time to set your calendars. July 1st, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. You know what time it is. It's time for those custom programs to reopen so you can build the bag of your dreams. Every part of the bag customizable. You know you want one. It's time to get one for the summertime. PoundDiscGolf.com, July 1st, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Be there. Welcome back to The Upshot. And look who it is. Jamie Thomas back with us on the program. And of course, now working for the Disc Golf Pro Tour as their media content and development manager. Jamie, how are you, man?
Hey, what's going on? I'm telling you what, the sun hasn't even teed off yet today, and I'm already on The Upshot this morning, so I'm doing pretty good. How y'all?
Amazing. We are doing it. We made Jamie get up at 5:30 a.m. Pacific time, so we're doing great and excited to have you here for this pre-world show and talk a little disc golf. And, you know, this is your first time back, I'm pretty sure. So how has it been on the other side?
Whew. It's been a lot of fun. It is, you know, a dream job. I'm very blessed to be working with a lot of amazing people. I dearly miss doing the show every week because it was so much fun, and I have not missed an episode since giving up the chair. It's a wild ride. On top of being a new dad, like, I haven't really had time to like sit and think about it. You know, it's just 1 week, do this the next week, and try to hold everything together. It's been a fun one.
Awesome. Well, we're going to dig into some more stuff about what you've been doing over at the Pro Tour and with the Disc Golf Network in our subscriber bonus segment. So stick around for that. You can become a subscriber for less than $4 a month at discgolf.ultiworld.com/subscribe. But of course, we're focusing on Worlds. This will be the first World Championships since 2019, you know, like middle of the summer. So almost two full calendar years since we've had a World Championships. And does that make it extra special this year? I mean, we've had, you know, we kind of had a mostly full season in 2020 during COVID with Pro Tour events. You know, we had a major at the end of the year. We had the Pro Tour Championship. We've had a full touring schedule. But is this Worlds extra special? What do you think, Jamie?
Oh, sure. I mean, no doubt. You can hear it in how people have been talking about just the last month of the tour. And, you know, not to mention that the tour has been a grinder this year, having all the events kind of back on the table, everybody wanting to get the points, everybody just wanting to really cement their name in this pivotal time. But despite all of that happening, Worlds has certainly been on the forefront of everybody's mind.
There's something about this tournament that just matters more. It just matters more. And I think not being able to play last year is, you know, just amplifies the focus on this year. I mean, we had Paige Pierce on the show talking about how she had to dial back how much she was focused on Worlds because she felt like it was distracting her from the week in and week out, you know, tour events. Josh, does this tournament truly mean more? Like, to players, it seems like it does. Do you think, as a fan and as, you know, an onlooker in the media, do you think it means more than the other majors, the other top events?
I think so. And the reason why is I think that there's something to be said about that title that comes with it. And that's why oftentimes the introductions of players, Paul McBeth, 5 times world champion, Ricky Waisaki, 2-time world champion, the reason that we still consider, I mean, largely Greg Barsby in a lot in conversations is we talk about him as a world champion. And from that win in 2018, that was something that cemented himself as an elite player, because regardless of performance in and out of a season, having a world title behind your name means that your name carries some weight to it.
So let's get into some of the conversations here. First thing I want to bring up, you know, even outside of the courses themselves, is the location of the courses and what it's going to be like out there next week. It's Ogden's at 4,300 feet, and it is going to be extremely hot. It's going to be in the mid to high 90s all week. It's bone dry in Utah at this time of year, so even though you may not feel the like devastating humidity that you might if it was hot on the East Coast, you get dehydrated extremely fast with a combination of the heat and the altitude. You know, with a 5-round event, which of course players are not accustomed to. I mean, they've played some 4-rounders this year, but it's mostly 3-rounders. That's going to be an extra factor, along with, you know, some physical altitude here and there, like in terms of the actual altitude of the course. How much is the weather and the conditions and the, you know, the flight of the disc being different because we're at altitude and stuff tends to be a little bit more stable? Every disc kind of goes up a slot in terms of stability. How much is that going to play a factor in determining outcomes this weekend, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big factor. I mean, and again, not to harp on the same point, but coming off of a West Coast swing that had a lot of events in it, I was trying to think. Two events this year have had 4 rounds, Las Vegas and DDO. I'm trying to think if there have been any others. But yeah, so you're going, the sport is shifting mainly towards a three round event structure. And to go to 5, to go to the altitude, to go to the weather like it is, I mean, I'm looking at the weekly forecast, like cloud cover is going to be low on top of everything you just said. So will it be 2017 Worlds like sweat fest? Maybe not quite that bad, but it's definitely going to play a factor by the time you get to round 4. I mean, you're going to start to see some of the more seasoned players really take advantage of that, I think.
I think the other thing that's noteworthy is that those players who are contending have later tee times. They're playing during the hottest time of the day, which means if you're playing well, you are going to be taking the brunt of it. And not to say those at, you know, the 8 a.m. tee time or 7 a.m. tee times are going to be making that push up thanks to their advantage in the early times. But I think it could make a difference between being able to finish a little bit earlier, even an hour earlier during the hottest part of the day. And so it's noteworthy to see that those lead cards are truly going to be in just the worst heat for the entire round and the entire tournament.
It is worth noting, as far as I know, FPO tee times will be in the morning every round. MPO tee times will be in the afternoon for every round. That could mean that it tends to be a little bit hotter out there for MPO. You know, I think the women's lead cards are going to typically be going off around, I don't know, like 10 a.m., 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. Or I guess Mountain Time, right? Utah?
Mountain Time.
Time. Thank you, Mountain Timer. I've lost the touch, man. I grew up in Albuquerque. I know what the altitude is like. I know what the heat is like. Here's the tricky thing about it, okay? It doesn't feel, even when it's hot, even when it's 95 degrees, you feel the sun. You feel that it's hot. But you don't have that kind of like brutal, like, oh my God, I'm dying, where you're sweating really hard because it's so dry. And what that means is that you can forget to hydrate and you can really get hit by that. Now, I know most players will have some time there, you know, maybe a lot of time, a week plus, to kind of acclimate to being at 4,300 feet and get used to the flight of the discs. But it really is something you have to watch out for, because you don't necessarily notice that it's like, when you're really sweating, you're like, I need to drink water. And when you're not, you may not think that. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm so thirsty. I'm really dehydrated. Or you might feel really sick at the end of the day because you've been out in the sun. So it's just going to be something to keep an eye on, especially out there at Mulligan's, where there's not as much tree cover. So 6X versus 1X. Jamie brought this idea up and I really like this one. What's going to mean more this year? If we see Paige or Paul or both get to that 6X mark and win their 6th title, or if somebody wins for the first time, is one of those things going to ultimately have a bigger impact, meaning this year in 2021 after we missed Worlds in 2020?
You might be leaving one off that list. Of that 6X, there's somebody else in the field that could also get to that 6 level. How about Juliana Korver?
Oh my goodness, I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, who am I missing?
I watched Charlie's
of
face.
Of course, Juliana Korver, who I was expecting maybe to do commentary this weekend, but instead is playing, and you cannot count her out.
Oh, 5:30 a.m. brain over here. I got this. We're going. Yeah, look, I think it's different in different divisions, right? I think in FPO, I think 6X is like, is it maybe more expected? I don't know if that's totally fair to say. I mean, we have a lot more relative to MPO multi-time world champions. And certainly the women's game hasn't developed in the same time frame as the men's game. Of course, you know, we've talked about that for, that's been a major storyline in the last 5 years, is how that parity's coming about. I don't know. I was so ready to say 1X for FPO because of what I just said, but I think because there's two 6Xers on the table in FPO, how can you not love that storyline? Like, if Paige wins, it's the dominance. She's making the movie right now. If that could cap it off and she could put that out, that story out there, or if Juliana, who decides, hey, like you said, she had a foot in the door of the media world. She's on this show. She's been doing the what's now the Throw Pink Championship for Live. I mean, and then she's just like, oh, by the way, I'm back on tour because I can still hang with y'all. That's amazing.
And she's like a lock for being in the top 10 of the power rankings that's coming out on Monday. Like, she's been playing really well.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, so I'm going to go 6X there. I think for MPO, I will stick with 1X would be crazy meaningful. I mean, there's some people who, like, they either didn't play this sport before the pandemic or they didn't take it that seriously before the pandemic. Like, I just think everything went up a level, kind of like it did in life. And so if somebody can translate that and say, oh, hey, by the way, I'm here to play. I mean, I'm thinking back to your Tuesday episode. You guys were talking about Kyle Klein. Is it an overreaction or is it, you know, is it something you learned that he could compete? And it's like, just think about a guy like that. What if he could pop off? I mean, I don't know that I'm picking him, but you get what I'm saying.
Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, so just continue with the NPO discussion. I think that it's important to consider as well some of those 1X names that we're talking about. Eagle McMahon, Calvin Heimberg, Kevin Jones, James Conrad. I mean, names that we oftentimes put in our top 5, top 10 power rankings and picks for week in and week out, who have continually dominated the landscape, except at Worlds, where Ricky and Paul have closed out over, I mean, we were talking about this, over the past 5 years, it's been Macbeth Wysocki 1-2, except in 2018 when Barsby stole it from him. That proves, I think 1X is so much more significant because it establishes who the real contender is in terms of those elite series, in terms of the majors, and who can stand up to the Ricky and Macbeth just dominance of the world championships.
For me, it's 1X in both divisions. I mean, I get what you're saying, Jamie, about the storyline in FPO particularly. It's just, to me, like, going from 5X to 6X, it's just like diminishing marginal returns, you know? Like, Paige has done so much winning that if she wins again, and she will be the favorite, and I think she will be most people's pick to win her sixth title, it's obviously an incredible accomplishment. But if somebody comes out and wins their first time, you know, let's say, you know, Heather Young or Kristen Tatar or Owen Scoggins or, I mean, you know, you can go down the list of people who would be getting their first ring. I mean, it just would be such a shocking upset on its own that it would be fascinating. And I think the same thing is true in MPO. And I, like, Josh, I was going to make the same point that you just made, which is that the people who are likely on the list to get that first title are people who have already been incredibly competitive. You know, I don't expect a Greg Barsby story again. As awesome as that was, I mean, it really does feel like there was that just weird outlier year in 2018. And to me, you know, if somebody goes and wins their first title, it's going to be an Adam Hammes or an Eagle, a Calvin Heimberg, right? So people who've been competing at the highest level, Chris Dickerson, you know, back in the field this weekend. So that to me is going to just be like, wow, such a wow story. If Paul wins again, great. I mean, obviously incredible achievement, especially that, you know, he's been good this year, if not like absolutely his best. For him to come out and win Worlds would be extra special, I think, but it still would be more meaningful to the overall kind of like story of disc golf if somebody gets there first.
Like, I skipped over like all these other guys like Conrad and Hamas and like Eagle McMahon, and I went with Kyle Klein. Like, no disrespect to Kyle at all, but there were a lot of people on that list I couldn't.
It's 5:30 there, Jamie.
Kyle's legit. Yeah. I mean, we saw. Brains I think out. We can see that Kyle's going to compete out there. I think these courses set up really well for a 1X. I have to say that. I think that it's not necessarily the case that, you know, there's like clear separation for the like sort of 10-50 guys. You know, over the course of five rounds, it's going to be really hard to beat the top players, because they just, every round, they have that innate advantage of a couple of strokes on average that tends to pile up. So I don't think I'm going to bet on that, but I won't be shocked, because I think these courses, you know, are designed in a way that somebody gets a little bit hot, they can make that run and push up on the leaderboard. Let's talk about these courses for a second. Mulligans versus Fort. Which of these courses is going to create more separation? Where is somebody going to win the tournament? Keep in mind, two on the Mulligans, three on the Fort. So you have a couple more, the extra round in the woods, which, you know, compare that to 2018 where we had the extra round on the kind of the more open course, Fox Run. So where are we going to see the separation come this weekend?
I think it actually will have to do a lot with the weather. That's going to be my prediction, because, and I know the layout has changed a little bit since I've played at Mulligan's back in 2015, but one thing about that course, it's on a golf course, so the fairways are very fast, the greens are very fast, big skip potential, especially given the altitude, and some greens that are really treacherous. I mean, you're talking like inside the circle, water behind. Depending on the weather, I think is going to determine how likely the field is to get aggressive on those holes. If there's no sense in going for it, then who's going to run that 50 footer, especially if you have three rounds on the other course. And then when you talk about the Fort, I can't get past Matt Bell taking Ricky Wysocki down with some just blazing hot putting. That guy just would run anything. I mean, he won the virtual putting invitational this year because the guy is just fearless. So I think it depends on more like, are you a drive forward or a putt forward kind of player? Because the answer might vary based on that.
For me, I think the answer is that in terms of the Fort, there are three rounds there. I don't think the tournament is won on the Fort. I think the tournament is lost on the Fort, though. If you have poor putting and you don't feel confident running things, or you do run and you get aggressive and you find yourself in what are greens that, though, are not OB per se, do have a lot of things inside of circle one, trees and obstacles that are going to make it more difficult if you miss your putt, I think that it would be easy then, because the Fort has some holes that are must birdies, and some that are real bonus birdies, but really expect this kind of field and the caliber that they're going to be playing at to get. But then after that, it kind of caps out about where you can really achieve your potential at the Fort. But the Fort is also the course that dealt Ricky a 999 rated round a couple years ago. So I think the Fort is where the players go to lose their tournament. I don't know if it's where they get the scoring separation in terms of getting a hot round to win it, though.
I just got a chance to catch up on all of the Gatekeeper coverage from Utah Open. So I got a chance to look at the courses and really study them a little bit before Worlds. You know, I think the real theme of this Worlds is going to be really tricky greens. That's the theme. It's not overwhelming distance. There's definitely some tricky lines at the Fort, but more often than not, the challenge is, can you get your shot into the correct part of the green in order to be successful? And then on a Mulligan's, almost every single green has hazard or water right by it. And there's some hills. There's a lot of tee shots where it's difficult to get the disc parked, and you're seeing lots of longer putts. Edge of the circle, circle two. So I think putting is going to be critical, absolutely critical. And then like just proper line shaping in the woods and scramble performance. Those are the things that are coming to mind for me. I'm taking like distance and power, not entirely out of the equation, but I just don't think that's going to be the thing that determines who wins. There's plenty of holes that everybody's going to be able to reach And it's really a question of who shapes the shot well and can you make the circle two putt? And we have two very different styles of kind of putting challenge, right? On Mulligan's, it's can you hit from 50 feet and not be afraid of going in the water if you miss? And that is important. On Fort, it's can you putt with an obstacle in your way? Can you putt around a tree? Can you make the tricky, weird putts? So those are the things that I think are really going to stand out. Where does that play out more? I actually think there's probably more separation to be had on the putting green on Mulligan's because the people who can hit those long, long circle two putts are going to be the ones who can be successful. So I like Katrina Allen's chances, for example, because that's bread and butter. You know, you think about the players at top MPO right now. Paul McBeth leads the way in circle two putting, but all those top guys have just been unbelievable from circle two this year. You know, Chris Dickerson, Ricky Wysocki, Adam Hammes, Kevin Jones, these guys are all hitting from that circle two distance. And I think that's going to be the separating factor, whereas Fort feels like it's a little bit more randomness, a little bit more luck out there. Where does your disc land? Do you punch through the gap out of the trees or do you need to clip the one tree and bounce to the wrong side of the green? To me, the separation is going to happen with the putting at Mulligan's. So that's where I'm really looking for who's going to separate.
Something to consider too. I mean, when you have such a wide open course, I mean, Mulligan's, you're just looking miles into the distance, right? And it's that old thing of like, remember when they first started moving some of the, maybe not first started, but when they started really popularizing like the NCAA tournament at the football stadiums? Like, I'll never forget the one year, like the Final Four was in Detroit. This is just some random year that I was watching. And the players were complaining about shooting threes when the stands are so far behind the backboard because this target is just out in space and it's harder to kind of get your bearings. So I think that's going to be interesting that you bring that up because like, Mulligan's, there's nothing in front of you on the green. It's just, do you have the mental fortitude to make that putt? At the Fort, it could very well be there's a physical object in front of you if you want to make this putt on that green. So which pick your poison, right?
All right, let's talk about some players here. I want to start, before we talk favorites and dark horse, I want to talk about Kristen Tatar, who, as much as it stinks that we won't have all of the Europeans here, I mean, I think we can all kind of just be honest and admit that like Evelina Salonen and Hanna Blomroos are really the two players who are not going to be here that would be legitimate contenders to win this tournament. No disrespect to Vaino Makkala and some of the other players in MPO, but I don't think that anybody would really pick those players to win. That doesn't necessarily mean it's right that Worlds is, you know, kind of just moving forward without them. It stinks, but Kristen Tatar will be there, and Kristen Tatar has won a U.S. Women's Championship. She's won a major. Is she going to come out here and be the player to put pressure on Paige Pierce and try to, you know, take that crown on these courses in Utah?
I hope so. I mean, that's what we want to see, right? It's a non-zero chance that she could come out and be kind of rusty. I mean, she hasn't really gotten to compete. I don't even think she's gotten to compete often against Evelina and Henna over in Europe. And I seem to remember her making a post about it somewhat recently. So I hope so, because otherwise, I mean, it's just going to be that. I don't want the storyline to be, hey, we had another Worlds in America, you know, it's true, but like, when you weigh the different factors and going in and the fact that we're having a Worlds this year and how much it means to the players, I would just hate for anybody's victory to kind of be overshadowed by that
for
talk.
Sure.
I mean, of course, it's not ideal, but and I think Kristen coming out and repping well, I think might fuel the fire of some other players, but I think that's what needs to happen in order to like keep everything kind of in line. Cause I agree. I don't know that. And again, no disrespect, but I don't know that we're legitimately talking about a European MPO world champion this year. The field has just been ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Josh, what do you think?
I think that, one, the competition obviously is there, but the second thing is relative practice in the area, on the courses. She only came in just, Wednesday, I think, is when she got to Utah. Flew in Tuesday. So at best, I think started playing practice rounds on Wednesday, if that. That's significantly less time than someone like Paige, for example, who played the Utah Open. And given all the things that we've talked about the Utah climate, about the courses, the unique putting greens. And honestly, I think the putting greens are the chance that keeps Kristen Kattar in the game. I remember Kristen being a good putter. I don't know if she was known for the putting necessarily, but putting is a skill that I think you can practice a lot, even if you don't have the opportunity to play as much as you'd like to. And so given that that's a skill that is something that can be regularly practiced, I think that might bode well for Kristen over a course that, I don't know, necessarily dictates something that you've had the opportunity to play more rounds. So I think she'll be in there, but...
Let me hit you with some facts right now. 2019 season stats. Kristen Kattar second behind Paige Pierce in Circle 2 putting. Paige was at 21%, Kristen at 17%. Circle 1 putting, Kristen Kattar tied at the top with Paige Pierce, Missy Gannon, and Lisa Fakus at 71%. Now, the thing is, if you zoom ahead to 2021, we're seeing those stats improve across the board. 71% was good enough for first place in 2019. This year, 2021, 84%, the leader owns Scoggins, but multiple players up above 80. And then, you know, Paige Pierce all the way up to 78%. 21% is the high water mark in Circle 2 putting. That's Katrina Allen. So how do we predict? I mean, it's almost impossible to really truly predict. We haven't seen Kattar play. She's won all of the events she's played this season, all C tiers. Like, okay, you're the best player in Estonia. We know that. So I don't want to overly set the expectations to be some super high level. I think, you know, she's been consistently in the 960, 970, 980 rated rounds. That's good. Is it good enough to beat Paige? I mean, we've seen generally in FPO, you have to shoot 990 plus, even sometimes 1,000 plus rated average for a tournament in order to win it. Can Kattar do that? I think we can say that she can. Will she? I don't know. I don't know about that. All right, well, let's talk about some of the favorites this weekend. Who do you look at as the favorite, Jamie? Josh and I have discussed this a bunch. You know, I think it's Paige Pierce, I think pretty obviously in FPO. But if you're looking at MPO, who do you say is the favorite to win, even if it's not your pick? Who do you think is the Vegas betting odds favorite?
Yeah, I mean, you could go ahead and just sew up FPO. Paige Pierce is the favorite. Katrina Allen is the next up. I mean, just... the way Paige has been playing lately, I don't know what other argument you make. MPO, it gets a lot more interesting, and I really enjoyed the discussion on the Tuesday episode about Ricky. And, you know, are we looking at Pat? Has he peaked for his season? Not for his career, but, like, has his season trajectory peaked based on the last couple of weeks? Because Eagle McMahon, by the way, looking really strong coming off two back-to-back Disc Golf Pro Tour wins. So, but I think... right there are your two favorites. I don't know. I'm going to be totally chalk here and just say that it's somebody in the 1050 club. Like, it's, I know. That's hot take in here. Wearing the corporate shirt. Can't do the hot takes anymore. What's going on?
I mean, Josh, do you have a final sense of who do you think the actual odds on favorite is?
I don't. I
you can't do it either.
Take.
You can't do it either.
I really can't. Like, because betting against Paul McBeth, you know, if I had money in my hand right now and I went to go look at betting odds, like, betting against Paul McBeth feels like a terrible financial decision. I'm pretty sure I'd go to a financial investor and be like, don't bet against Paul McBeth. Whatever you do, like, that's one thing I can tell you not to do with your money. Ricky, with his history, has been good, but but now there's questions about is he at that peak? Eagle's hot right now. I don't know. I think they're all even at odds. They all come into the same betting odds.
I don't think that's outlandish. I mean, personally, I think if you actually put up odds in Vegas and people were laying down bets, I think it would probably be Ricky and Paul, very close to the same odds at the best. You know, Eagle would be a little lower in my mind. That doesn't necessarily mean that he shouldn't be considered the favorite, but I just think that there's going to be people who say, well, it's Woods. You know, we've got three rounds of the fort. Can Eagle be at his best on that kind of course? And I think there's going to be people who say, you know, he hasn't done it before. And I think those are both legitimate things. I mean, the fact is, as you said earlier, Josh, 4 out of the last 5 years, it's been Ricky and Paul 1 and 2 in some order. And how are you really going to look at the way that those guys have been playing and the way these courses set up and think that, that's not going to, you know, that it's not going to be those top two again? I think that the odd side of things says that that's what's going to play out. Now, the actual picks, well, we're going to get to them. Let's talk about some dark horses before I put Jamie on the spot again and try to make him make some actual winner picks. Who are the players that you look at and say they've got a really good chance this weekend, even if they're not the favorite? You know, who could spoil the party for the 6Xers?
Ooh, I've gone back and forth on this. Because the horses that I would probably call dark horses just because of the title, where we're at, like if this was a pro tour event, national tour, something like that, the stakes are different, right? We've made that argument in our proof today. I want to say somebody like Dickerson or like Hamus because they're still searching for that win. Well, Dickerson, kind of that went out the window when he won USDGC. And by the way, the Fort probably is going to set up really nicely for him. And Hamus, man, now a month ago, he's a great dark horse pick. And all of a sudden, he's got a Masters Cup and he wins up in Trojan for the Silver Series. So, like, he's just blowing up the spot right now. Maybe it is Kyle Klein to bring his name back into the mix. I think early season, we would have said Ezra Aderholt. But I think, you know, he's still got some learning to do and some growing as a week-in, week-out player to get to where he wants to be. So, I mean, Kyle Klein's been around there, and I think it's important because the reason we call Eagle the favorite or in that favorites group is because you look at his history in majors. You look at the Aussie Open where he Ricky Wysocki had to play out of his mind good to come back and take it from a very young Eagle McMahon. He wins Kono Piste, which some people say was a soft major. Whatever, it's an M. He's got the title next to his name, right? Like he's had the heartbreak at Worlds. He had the handbreak at USDGC. So like he's learned the lessons at these big events. And I've now seen Kyle kind of following that same mold of Adam Hamus, where you're like, you're just taking those steps. Is it your year? Maybe, maybe not. But maybe that's what the dark horse is supposed to be.
I'm gonna give you a couple names here. First up, Bradley Williams, elite scrambler. Very good putter. Finished 6th at Utah Open. Looked competitive out there. And I think can clean it up on Mulligans, where he lost 7 strokes to Emerson, Keith, and Ricky Wysocki. By the way, I don't think Emerson Keith can be considered a dark horse, which maybe is unfair. But when you come out and you win the you know, the World's Course preview, then you lose dark horse ability. I mean, I still think he's like definitely an underdog, but I mean, talk about the time to dial in the game. Another name I'll give you, who's been up there at Worlds Past, was in the top 5 in 2018, Matt Orem. Matt Orem also played well at Utah Open. A similar kind of story, just played kind of bad at Mulligans, but I think, you know, can clean that up. And I mean, this guy, when we see him out there on tour, there he is at the top. There he is on the lead card in the final round. It's just, you don't see him week in and week out, so you kind of forget that he can be that guy. Obviously, Chris Dickerson cannot be considered a dark horse, but I don't know what form his game is in right now. That's my question mark about Chris Dickerson. It's like, he's been a little bit worse pretty much across the board than we saw him in 2020. So there's a couple names for you. Over in the FPO side, Valerie Mondujano, does she qualify? Perhaps. I think Owen Scoggins with the putter can absolutely be, you know, super competitive. And, you know, how about, does Heather Young count? Is she still in the dark horse category? One of the best scramblers on tour, obviously. Maybe the best putter on tour. Those skills, I think, are really going to come into play. 3 rounds at the Fort. The distance isn't as crushing as some other courses where I think Heather, you know, really starts to be at a disadvantage to the top throwers. And I don't think we can talk about this tournament without talking about Ella Hansen, who's just been on fire and is clearly a top 10 player over the last 2 months. And, you know, I don't know if the putting is good enough for her to win over five rounds, but clearly has to be considered at least a dark horse contender.
Top 10? Top 10 for Ella? I don't know. I kind of feel like Ella's setting up for a little bit of a letdown based on how well she's been playing lately.
Playing above the pay grade a little bit.
Look, the ceiling's there. I mean, what did Dustin Keegan call her? Like, she called her the LeBron James of Ultimate.
He did.
Charlie, I was expecting like some big pushback on that episode from that comment too. And that, then she went out and played extremely well. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Let me throw two MPO names in there real quick. Sorry, Josh, I'm cutting you off, man. The two MPO names that I think they're well-known names. They are major winners, but are they dark horses? Kind of the inverse of that line is a Nico LeCastro and a Nate Sexton. Are any of you honestly picking them to win this event outright?
No chance.
Podium? Podium's tough.
Nico's going to have to play so much better than he played this weekend. Nate Sexton hasn't played enough. I can't in good conscience pick Nate to be in a podium at Worlds right now. I can't.
Dark horse?
I mean, could he do it? Sure. I think he qualifies for dark horse.
Mm-hmm. It's weird calling major winners dark horses.
I think he qualifies for dark horse right now.
Yeah. I've got one more MPO name I want to throw in the mix. Matt Bell. Matt Bell, former Utah Open winner.
Sure.
Amazing putter. Jamie pointed him out earlier. And, you know, so he's been around. He's won big events. He's stayed in the mix. He's got that experience. And I think these courses set up really well for his skill set.
I mean, don't forget, he finished eighth at Masters Cup. And I think Masters Cup, at least if you kind of squint, is Fordish. A little bit.
Close one eye.
You know, treacherous, some weird bounces, trees, tough greens. You know, they're definitely different courses, but I think the fact that he finished in the top 10 there is a signal that he could, you know, be competitive. You know, versus the long, long, long bomber courses, DDO 57th, OTB 41st, Portland Open 45th. You know, that's just not to his skill set. But I think with three at the fort, you're going to see players who have been forgotten this season all of a sudden be competitive, and it's going to be like, whoa, what the heck, how did they start playing so well? And it's like, wait, well, because the course has changed. We've been on so many long Eagle, Calvin courses, Paige, Katrina, that it's going to be jarring to switch now to where even Mulligan's, which is definitely golf coursey and fairly kind of straightforward, but it's not that long. It's more about, can you place your shots well? It's more technical than you think, is really what I would say.
You can certainly get over-aggressive out at Mulligan's and pay for it, which, if you're talking about the common critique of using golf courses as event venues, I mean, I think that's the one thing that rings true to the player's experience throughout the whole thing. So Mulligan's flips that on its head a bit.
All right, it's time to make some picks. Jamie, I'm putting you on the spot. I'm not going to make you do a top five, but I want you to pick your winners.
Whew.
We'll see if he can do it, Josh.
All right. Winners for me, I think I can't not go against Paige. I just can't. Like, I was ready to come in and be controversial about it, but she has just really shut down the conversation in the last month. And here's the thing, I feel like I'm back on the upshot because I used to say this all the time. Like, Katrina Allen's playing great. She's playing amazing right now. She's playing phenomenal. And just Paige somehow finds a way to cover up the division when you're sitting there like with, hey, put your money on the line. So, you know, mad respect to the GOAT. I got to pick her to win, and it will be a lot of fun if she doesn't. It'll be pretty cool if she does, because again, she's making the movie. Oh man, I'm just so I'm just chalking it up right here. This is hot take letdown from me, but I'm riding the hot hand with Eagle. And here's why, though. Here's why. He said to me in an interview early this season, he said, I'm going to dial up the intensity. I want people to know that when I step on the course that I'm here to play. And true to his word, what he's done, and it is a great point about the style of courses that he's won on lately, and he didn't play Masters Cup, notably. He just skipped it outright, so we don't have that data point. But the way he's turning up that intensity and the way what the look I saw in his eyes when he made that putt at Portland that he missed in Portland to go to the playoff with Drew Gibson. I know different course, but mental scenario is the same. Like, if you could stare down a demon like that right before going to Worlds, like, that you're in prime position to take it if you want it. Now, does he stumble over his own 2 feet is the question.
Little discussed to this point, Eagle McMahon from Colorado knows how to play at altitude, knows how those discs are going to fly better than others, perhaps. That's something to keep in mind. Okay, well, let's go ahead and make our picks as well, Josh. We're going to go top fives as usual. I'll let you go first. Let's do FPO first. You taking Paige?
Of course, I'm taking Paige. I like my money too much to not pick Paige. I love sports. I talked about that when I first started the Upshot. I watch a ton of other sports. I bring in some other sports all the time, which means I also love sports superstition. So here's one for you, Charlie. If you look down at our, we've got that pulled up right now for past five world championships. Pierce, someone else. Pierce, someone else. Pierce. Trend says someone else. That's it does. There's the superstition is that this is supposed to be Paige's off year. It doesn't mean I'm picking against her. Paige is my number one.
But think about this before you continue.
Okay.
We missed 2020. So the hex of she was going to lose 2020 world.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. 2021, odd year.
Odd year.
She's back.
Yep. Okay. So COVID was Paige's off year. She's back for worlds. All right. Cool.
To be fair, she did not initially win PDGA Player of the Year in 2020. So eventually got co-player of the year from the PDGA. So continue.
We won't go back into that.
No, we're not going to touch any of that.
I want a Charlie rant. That's like the greatest gift coming back to the show is like, I just want a Charlie rant.
Charlie just cracked that can of worms just a touch and slid it over. He's like, anybody else want to play with that?
Only one worm got out of the can. Let's continue. All.
And then he's like, never mind. I don't want to talk about that. All right, FPO, second place, Haley King. I think that Katrina Allen's circle two putting, like you talked about at Mulligan's, has been great. Her circle one putting this past weekend was not good at the Utah Open. And so I think Haley King's got the full skill set that it's going to – I think she's going to do well. The dark horse, I know Jamie said we might be looking at a letdown, but I've picked Ella Hansen for third.
Wow.
She has been playing – out of her mind, and I think that she does have really good touch and great scramble. She scrambled incredible at Portland Open. I think she's got the touch to get into those greens in effective and safe ways that can kind of compensate for maybe the little bit lack of putting, but her putting's been getting better as she goes. So Ella Hansen third. I've got Katrina Allen in fourth. Maybe that's too low, but I think that the putter monster is going to strike from circle one this week. And so Katrina Allen fourth. And I put Kristen Tatar in fifth. I think if she takes top five, that's a success story for her. So,
all right. Well, I'm going to mix it up and I'm going to take Paige Pierce to win this tournament. I said on Tuesday, I think that Paige is going to get pushed. I think it's going to be more of a battle than people expect. But I do think that she's shown not only with her Utah Open performance, but I mean, it's kind of crazy when you pull up the, you know, the stats from the tournaments so far this year and you see, you know, after her little break out to Hawaii, she comes back and literally wins every single event. It's like, oh, okay. And like on all kinds of different courses, it's like, okay, I see that you're just totally dialed in right now and I can't pick against her. I just think that this is her, you know, she really, really, really wants to win. She's been preparing to play these courses as probably more than anybody in the division. And I don't think I can pick anyone else. It's second.
Before you move before you get that second, we've all picked Paige to win. So here's our week's over under.
Here it is.
Yes.
Paige wins by 7.5 strokes. That is just over, like, that's like 1.2 strokes per round in a lead. So just 7.5 strokes over under.
Under.
Okay.
Under.
Jamie wants the under too. Okay.
Yeah, I'll take the under.
For the sake of viewing, I hope you guys are right. I'm glad I've got the over, though.
Okay. There it is. Over under this week. 7.5 stroke win for Patriots. I mean, giving the field plus 7.5, I mean, that's hard to turn down. But it goes to show you just how much of a favorite Paige is. I mean, I don't think it's a crazy number. Okay, on I go. Kristen Tatar, I'm putting her in second place. Yes, I am. She's shown up in the big spots before. Think about the motivation. Think about the motivation. I mean, yeah, maybe she won't have as many days to practice the courses, but my goodness, months and months and months of not being able to play competitive disc golf. Now, you could say that's going to cause rust, but she's been practicing. She's been out practicing. You can see it on her Instagram. I think, you know, and like, don't forget, you go back to Worlds 2019, guess who was in second place? It was Evelina Salonen. Fourth place, Hannah Blomroos. The European women are right there. Don't forget about it. Kristen Tatar has come out, gone head-to-head, and beat all of these U.S. players to win a U.S. Women's Championship. She's done it. She's going to be competitive, and I'm going to put her in second place. Third place, Haley King. Love the game. Think she's going to be exceptional on both courses. I will not be shocked if she wins. I won't. Katrina Allen, I have in fourth place. I just don't think these courses set up the best for her game. There's just too much putting. There's just too much putting pressure. And it's hard to reach greens and have the short putts. So I don't know. I hope that she's locked in and hits 80% plus from C1, because I want to see that battle, but I don't know that this is the best setup for Katrina's game. Owen Scoggins, I have in fifth place. Great touch. Distance is not as much of a factor. Putting. Owen Scoggins has actually been up there before. In 2015, she was fourth at Worlds, which, you know, I don't even remember that. Because then she was kind of not really on tour for a couple years and then rejoined. So don't sleep on Owen Scoggins. She's going to be out there flipping that leopard down the fairway. So that's my picks in FPO. Let's go to MPO. I'll go first this time. Man, have I gone back and forth. I tell you what, I have gone back and forth. We made our two early picks way back. I have gone back and forth on this a ton. And I've thought a lot about it. I'm really looking at the things that I mentioned so far. Scramble. Putting, and I like say just like sort of more generically like line shaping ability, and those are the things that have really informed my picks. And at the end of the day, I really like what I saw from Paul McBeth at Portland. I know he didn't win, but the putting was so dialed. He's been the best Circle 2 putter on tour this year, and he was locked in from C1. I think that those things are going to be enormously important. And does anybody question his ability to go out there and shape the lines? No way. I mean, this is the disadvantage of the 12,500 foot courses where he is giving up a little distance to guys like Eagle. That's gone. I think this sets up really well for him. I think he wants to silence the doubters. I'm taking Paul McBeth to win what will be a back-to-back world title and his third since 2015. In second place, I have Ricky Wysocki. So I'm keeping the streak alive with McBeth and Wysocki up at the top. Ricky, you know, loves Utah, has played great on these courses. Obviously a tremendous putter, the best scrambler like in the history of the game. I mean, some of the shots he made at Utah Open were just insane. So I got Wysocki. And in the top of my podium, on the third spot of my podium, I have Adam Hammes. Guy's locked in right now. He's dialed. I think, you know, he showed us at Masters Cup that he can really carve those lines in the woods. No one questions the putter. I think that he is ready for the big stage here and is going to top three it. Kevin Jones, I have in fourth. Circle 2 putting extraordinaire. Also, he was the best player in aggregate, I think, at Portland. Like, he's playing really well right now. And yeah, he had the bad hole. But I was unlucky. He caught a bad break, and he didn't win. But if he wins, is everybody putting him in their top? You know, top five, top three, maybe. I mean, this guy has proven that he can show up at the majors too. Always plays well. And in fifth place, I have Eagle McMahon. I have to say, I don't think that this is the best setup for Eagle. I just think that it's easy to fall in love with his game on the wide open courses, and it's just still a work in progress in the woods. We've got three at the fort. Can he get, you know, can he find the range there? Maybe. But I still think I'm going to take the players who have proven it consistently over him. So I have him in fifth, and those are my picks in MPO. I'll
tell you one thing. That putt that Paul McBeth made to end his Portland Open and to try to get into the playoff, I was standing behind him when he putted that. There is no camera angle that shows how good that putt
so
is.
Sick.
It doesn't. And there's some really good camera angles of that shot, and none of them say how hard that putt was and how that, and this little like look in his eye that he got right before he, you know, towed the mini and let it fly. Like, I knew that was going in before it left his hand. It was money.
Money. Josh, your picks. Take it away.
I want to go back last year to a really important phenomenon that you guys highlighted, and that was when Eagle won back-to-back Pro Tour events. It was something that hadn't been done in a long time, and it isn't done very often. Do you guys remember what his two wins were?
Idlewild and Diglo.
Idlewild. Eagle doesn't do it all the time, but he can do it. From the chase card, pushing in, wins Idlewild. I think that Eagle McMahon has the skill set. I think that, like you talked about, Eagle McMahon has learned the lessons. I think that this is Eagle McMahon's week. And I think it's he gets to take that first world title. And I think then we start... I think we've talked about it a lot. Eagle McMahon is a phenomenal player. He is young, and he has an amazing career in front of him, and he's had an amazing career thus far. And I think this is the week that he gets to put on the world championship crown and add that to his resume.
I mean, and ascend perhaps to consensus number one, I think, if he were to win.
No, number two, I've got Ricky Wysocki. I agree. You used a phrase, I think the greens are going to be tricky. Who else than Tricky Ricky to stay up on the podium then? I think that he's been playing well. Not as well as before, but well enough that I think he's good for second. I have Paul McBeth in third. I don't like betting against Paul McBeth, but I think that you're right. Paul McBeth is dialed in, but it's not like FPO where we can just say the five-time champion is coming for the six, and now we're making over-under picks about how much she wins by. and so I think I'm fine with Paul in third. I think he can have a great weekend, but that doesn't preclude someone else from just absolutely tearing the course apart. Number four, I've got Calvin Heimberg. I know that he went a little bit quiet recently, but at Portland he played great. He's back on that top five. Calvin is consistently on the podium, consistently in the top five, and I am... If you are a subscriber to The Upshot, you know that you get access to the Disc Golf Discord, where we regularly get to talk with listeners and kind of chat. And I am a regular defender of that top tier of the Eagle, Ricky, Paul, Calvin club. And I just think that Worlds is the time for them to show up. It's a two-course, five-round tournament. I don't want to pick against any of them. So Calvin in fourth, and then I have Adam Hammes in fifth, playing great lately. And I think that he, with the putter, has the capacity to definitely contend. I wouldn't be shocked if he made a podium finish, though.
Very fun. So two Eagle picks, one McBeth pick. Nobody taking Ricky Wysocki.
Brutal.
Which maybe he'll make us eat our words. It wouldn't be surprising. I mean, he felt like he had to pick him to win 2 months ago. And I still think he's coin flip to win. I think he's very much going to be in the contention there. So exciting stuff, man. This has been awesome. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today. Any final thoughts as we get ready for Worlds Week?
Oh, I'm just so excited. Thank you guys for having me. This was so much fun. I got up early for you, so that tells you, you know, Charlie, I was not an early riser. But for you guys, you're doing an incredible job with the show. I still listen every single week, and just killer job. I only have to do one thing. I gotta call Josh out on one thing before I leave.
Oh boy.
Call
the
out.
Only thing that I just think you've gotten totally wrong on this show so far. I heard you say it on episode.
I think I know what it
back,
is.
That you're a Denver Broncos fan. Okay. Charlie, how did you not tell this guy that every co-host of The Upshot is a New Orleans Saints fan.
That's true. We are. We've been two for two before Josh with Saints fans.
Go tweet it 1 mile more. Baby. He'll back me up. Got to give respect to the Niners. Even Yeti's a Saints fan, so I don't know if Juliana's got a team, but like, you're in Saints territory, man. So I got to tell you, Drew Brees is your quarterback. He had a wonderful career. We're looking forward to the future. I know Deshaun Watson might go to Denver, and that's exciting.
can I say real quick, Taysom Hill,
yeah,
Taysom Hill graduated from my high school, from my hometown.
Okay,
yeah, Taysom Hill graduated the year before I went into high school, so I am not a Saints fan.
So you can get tickets.
I'll see if I can get tickets.
Just call him up. Hey, buddy.
If I get you tickets, Jamie, does that make up for it?
Okay. Yes, that'll
I'll start working on that treaty.
Okay. Just call up your boy Taysom. Hey, man, I'm 5 years behind you at high school. Let's get some ticks. All right. That is going to do it for this week's edition of The Upshot. Don't forget, we'll be back every day next week during Worlds. We're probably going to do some live call-in shows, too. So if you want to call in and give your take about what we saw on the day or what you think is going to happen in the tournament, get ready. Look for a link. We're going to send that out, and people will be able to jump in into the podcast with us and chat about this World Championship. So look for us to be coming on the air after the MPO rounds in the afternoon. So that'll be, you know, evening time, mountain time. So stay up late, East Coasters, and let's enjoy the World Championships. Five rounds. I mean, this is it, folks. I mean, it's all been building up to this, and we're finally here. For Josh Mansfield and Jamie Thomas joining us this week, I'm Charlie Eisenhood saying so long, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday here on The Upshot. Don't miss our subscriber bonus segment with Jamie.
See ya.